The headlines this past week, the revolution in Bahrain gained momentum. Violence in Egypt. SCAP accused of force against women. Iraq in trouble.
Indiscriminate bomb attacks have made a return to the streets of Baghdad. Iraqi judicial officials have issued an arrest warrant for Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi on terrorism charges.
North Korea's leader Kim Jong-il passed away.
Hello and welcome to Reality Check's weekly review for the week ending Friday, December 23rd. I'm Kavitha Wei. Starting off with Bahrain, you may remember the commission set up by the Al-Khalifa regime recently, whose findings accused the regime of using excessive force and cited rights abuses. Yet this past week, Saudi-backed forces yet again attacked anti-regime protesters, injuring dozens. In one example, police arrested human rights activist Zainab Al-Khawaja near the capital, Manama. Zainab's relatives said she had been handcuffed, dragged, and beaten by the police.
Bahraini protesters once again took to the streets on Thursday across the Persian Gulf Sheikhdom to call for the downfall of the regime. Government forces used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse them. A teenage protester, identified as Ali Al-Qasab, was run over by a police car as he was protesting in the town of Abu Saiba near the capital, Manama. Many others were injured in other towns and villages. And several people, including prominent human rights activist Zainab Al-Khawaja, were detained. Zainab was arrested when she refused to leave a sit-in at a roundabout on the Budaya Highway west of Manama after other protesters were dispersed. She was handcuffed and dragged away by police. Activists blocked many roads, including the main highway leading to Manama. This after opposition groups called for protests and roadblocking.
The protesters have definitely shown that they are going to keep protesting until they see a real change. The steps that the government took might have been enough for the international community to stop talking about Bahrain. But for the protesters, they know better, and that's why they're keeping up the momentum until they see real steps taken towards reform.
Bahrain's revolution began in mid-February. Since then, dozens of people have been killed and many more arrested.
Well, since we're on the subject Bahrain, the book Bahrain, Political Development in a Modernizing Society by Emil Nahle was discussed in the book review program Epilogue, a great source to find out some history behind this Persian Gulf island, which was founded with the help of Britain.
Bahrain, Political Development in a Modernizing Society is a book banned in Bahrain for 30 years and allowed to be published in 2006. The book is based on field research done by the author, Emil Nakle, focusing on the tribal structure of Bahraini society and the rule of a minority Sunni government, led by the Al-Khalifa family over a largely disenfranchised Shia majority. The book analyzes the popular demands for participation in decision-making, the restrictions on freedom of speech and assembly, the denial of women the right to vote, the banning of political parties, and the role of clubs as surrogate political gathering places, the exclusion of the Shia majority from the economic and political centers of power, and the absence of government accountability and transparency. The February 2011 popular uprising in Bahrain underscores some of the key challenges discussed in the book, especially the autocratic nature of the Al-Khalifa regime and the urgency of political reform for domestic stability. Today in Epilogue, we will review the book Bahrain, Political Development in a Modernizing Society by Emil Nakle.
In 1971, the United Kingdom severed its special relationship with Bahrain, and on the second day after Bahrain had declared itself independent, it signed a treaty of friendship with the United Kingdom. The British ambassador to Bahrain still enjoys the special regard of the Al-Khalifa family. On the other hand, the Jaffair Naval Base in Bahrain, occupied by the British Navy for the last half century, has since December 1971 been leased to the United States Navy. The government of Bahrain has never published the text of this agreement in Arabic for its people. Hence, questions have persisted concerning this agreement and its economic and other benefits to Bahrain.
Egypt's revolution is experiencing what some might say a counter-revolution. Others disagree, siding with the protesters who want power transfer to a civilian rule. Clashes that erupted on Thursday and continued for days left over 14 people dead. And interestingly, the SCAF blamed the protesters and foreign hands to be behind the violence.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has condemned what it calls ruthless violence and inhuman acts at the hands of Egypt's military rulers against protesters. Navi Pillay has urged the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces, or SCAF, to act now and has warned that its members will risk future prosecution for complicity in serious crimes if they continue in the current path. Referring to the recent crackdown on protests, she has warned that such actions fuel further anger and dissent across the country. Pillay has also stressed that the ruthless violence being used against women protesters is especially shocking. Pillay's remarks come as police continue clashing with protesters in Egypt. Military police and forces in Cairo have killed at least 14 anti-junta protesters in the past 4 days alone. This has prompted Amnesty International to issue a statement calling on nations to stop selling small arms and ammunition to Egypt. The protesters demand that the Supreme Council of the Armed Forces immediately transfer power to a civilian government. They say the SCAF has continued with the old ruthless practices of the decades-long regime of ousted dictator Hosni Mubarak.
There will not be democracy. There will not be any public freedom. There will not be a state of law, and there will not be any sign of a respectable state unless military rule falls. Our first and last demand is the fall of military rule.
Activists and political groups are becoming increasingly vocal in their criticism of the ruling military for its failure to live up to its promise of handing over power to a civilian ruling structure within 6 months of the February revolution.
The uprisings in the Middle East is a result of a people's movement against the monarchies, which so far has toppled some regimes. But one country that has taken matters into its own hands is Saudi Arabia, who is resisting reform, playing a hand in Bahrain, Yemen, and Egypt. Nobel Peace Laureate Tawakkol Karman accused Saudi Arabia this past week of meddling in Yemen's internal affairs.
Before the revolution, since 33 years, they made many crises in Yemen. They didn't make any partnership with Yemen as a country. Just for with individuals, people and tribes, because they don't want country, not just democracy, country in Yemen they don't want.
Karman made the comments in a meeting with British parliamentarians in London. She also accused the Saudi rulers of corruption.
Do I blame Saudi? No. They did their rule to protect their kingdom. Their bad and corrupt authority.
Less than a month ago, Yemeni ruler Ali Abdullah Saleh signed a power deal in Riyadh. Saudi Arabia and other Persian Gulf states brokered a deal that called on Saleh to step down in return for immunity from prosecution. Yemeni protesters are angry with the deal. They say the new government is a far cry from the revolutionary demands because it incorporates the Saleh regime's remnants. They say Saudi Arabia is plotting to hijack their revolution. Saudi Arabia has already been accused of meddling with several regional countries' internal affairs. Saudi King Abdullah indicated his opposition to the protests and revolutions affecting the Arab world. Riyadh gave asylum to deposed President Zain al-Abidine Ben Ali of Tunisia and offered support for ousted Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak of Egypt. It also sent military troops to crack down on the revolution in Bahrain. Many believe Saudi Arabia has been busy abroad to ward off a revolution at home. Earlier this year, Saudi King Abdullah announced a series of job and housing benefits for citizens amounting to nearly $11 billion. However, the winds of change are already blowing through Saudi Arabia. Anti-regime protests are now held on a regular basis in the oil-rich monarchy, where protests or political gatherings of any kind are not tolerated.
North Korea's leader Kim Jong-il, at the age of 69, died of a heart failure this past week. State media said it happened while Kim was on a train visiting an area outside the capital. The leader's designated successor is believed to be his third son, Kim Jong-un, who is now referred to as the Great Successor.
South Korea has been slow in reacting to the death of North Korean leader Kim Jong-il, with Kim Jong-un, the youngest son of the dear leader, positioned to take power. As Kim Jong-il's body was shown lying in state in Pyongyang, in the streets of the North Korean capital, citizens expressed their grief. Doctors had suggested Kim had only a few years to live after suffering a stroke in 2008, yet his death seemed to take many by surprise. On state media, North Korea has described Kim Jong-un, the 29-year-old son of Kim Jong-il, as the great successor, seemingly cementing his future as leader of the nation. With the young Kim and Pyongyang's high-level officials seeming in firm control, South Korean authorities are struggling to find their policy.
Big news out of Iraq, an arrest warrant for Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi was issued for his alleged involvement in terrorist attacks which also involved government officials. That was followed by boycotts of parliament sessions by Iraq's Iraqiya bloc, putting the future of this fragile country into question.
Plumes of smoke billowing over the Iraqi capital. Indiscriminate bomb attacks have made a return to the streets of Baghdad. Multiple bomb blasts have killed dozens of people and injured large numbers of others. The explosions have also damaged many houses.
My baby was sleeping in her bed when shards of glass fell on our heads. Her father hugged her and carried her. She is now scared in the next room. All countries are stable. Why don't we have security and stability?
The blasts in Baghdad come against the backdrop of rising tensions within the Iraqi political scene. Iraqi judicial officials have issued an arrest warrant for Vice President Tariq al-Hashimi on terrorism charges. Hashimi is accused of running death squads that have allegedly killed Iraqi officials and civilians. Earlier, the Iraqi television aired confessions of men who said they had received orders from Hashimi to kill Iraqis. The vice president, who has fled to Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region, has dismissed the accusations as politically motivated.
If this man committed such acts of sabotage to his country and people, he would deserve to be tried. We are one people, God willing.
Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has called on the authorities in the Kurdistan region to hand over Hashimi to Baghdad for trial.
We ask our brothers in the Kurdish region to take responsibility and hand the wanted person over to the judiciary. They were well informed about this case.
Hashimi, a former Ba'athist, is affiliated with the Iraqiya bloc. There are other former members of the Ba'ath Party in the faction. Amid the bloodshed, and strangely enough, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has called on Baghdad to resolve the issue according to the Iraqi constitution. Analysts have interpreted Biden's remarks as tacit support for the Iraqi bloc and its members, the same members that many blame for the spate of recent violence in the country.
If you're a fan of polls, Gallup's findings on Americans' views of their Congress was very telling. At more than any point in their history of the polls, it showed more Americans were dissatisfied with Congress than ever before. The governing body was now set to end 2011 with the lowest one-time approval rating in its history, a mere 11%.
A new Gallup survey records just 11% approval for the Congress, the lowest single rating by the agency in its 37-year history. Some other media organizations recently recorded an even lower rating for the legislative body at a dismal 9%. New polls come at a time when Congress is wrangling over extensions of a payroll tax. Democrats argue that it will help stimulate the sluggish economy, but Republicans remain skeptical. On Tuesday, House Republicans rejected a bill approved by Senate that would have extended the payroll tax cut, a plan that affects 160 million people. U.S. Congress has so far failed to tax the 1% top American billionaires. Americans remain concerned about the rising debt, unemployment, and mortgage problems. They accuse federal and state governments, as well as corporate America, for accumulating the mountain of debt. A new CBS poll has found that majority of Americans want Congress to raise taxes on the rich. 69% of those who were polled believe the nation is on the wrong track. Many Americans say the country is being sucked into an economic black hole from which it will never fully recover. These also point to the rising gap between the rich and the poor. The growing social and economic inequalities have also forced Americans to take to the streets to show their opposition to policymakers. Inspired by the Occupy Wall Street movement that started in New York, people keep pouring onto the streets on an almost daily basis. Now in its fourth month, the movement, which is an embodiment of their frustration, has attracted Americans from all walks of life. Authorities have so far failed to halt the growing tide of protests, resorting to a harsh crackdown. Thousands of protesters have been arrested. The protesters denounced the crackdown as a blatant attempt to limit their freedom of speech. They have vowed to stay in the streets until authorities bow to the legitimate demands of the 99%.
Yvonne Ridley's program, The Agenda, asked a pretty heavy question from his guest this past week. Will Scottish voters bring an end to the United Kingdom? It also happened to coincide with Britain's cabinet chief prediction, who said the breakup of the United Kingdom was a real possibility in the next few years.
Britain, will Scottish voters bring an end to the United Kingdom? Support for Scottish independence is at its highest level since the Scottish National Party came to power in 2007. The news is greeted with alarm in parts of England, where there are fears the end of the United Kingdom could now become a reality. But the SNP's huge support comes at a time when the coalition government in Westminster is making massive cuts and increased university tuition fees, while the SNP has remained committed to free higher education and has also abolished medical prescription charges in Scotland. However, public support for independence is still linked on whether it will improve prosperity and economic success for the Scots. Those who want to keep a United Kingdom says this is proof that the principled belief in national sovereignty, as popularly portrayed in the Braveheart movie, is non-existent. According to the annual study by the Scottish Centre for Social Research, 32%, nearly a third of Scots, supported independence this year, compared with just 23% the previous year, a rise likely to be closely linked to Alex Salmond's landslide victory in May's general elections for the devolved parliament.
The United Kingdom's 300-year-old alliance is facing challenges in maintaining the union as pressure increases for Scottish independence. The warning came from the top British civil servant, Cabinet Chief Sir Gus O'Donnell. The outgoing Cabinet Secretary says the rise of the Scottish National Party, SNP, has presented a huge test for the UK.
FG Mackenzie's program, Double Standards, is usually known for its comedic take on politics, but a serious matter was also discussed with his guest, and that was homelessness. Did you know that in the UK, every 2 minutes, a family or someone goes homeless?
We know that homelessness is rising. We know that in the run-up to Christmas, almost 640 households every single day are going to receive a letter threatening them with the loss of their home. They could end up in court fighting to keep a roof over their heads.
And the public imagination's view of homelessness is that basically these are alcoholics, drug addicts and so forth. Are those the 640 a day?
It's absolutely not the case. We know that homelessness is a horrific experience.
Not that alcoholics and drug addicts shouldn't be looked after.
Absolutely, but we know that the vast majority of homeless people who face the threat of homelessness are ordinary people who, for one reason or another, have run into difficulties with their mortgage, we know that, or with their rent. We know that people who are homeowners are finding themselves overstretched. We know that people who are renters are finding that if they lose their jobs, if they fall sick, if something else happens in their lives, that it can only take one little thing and suddenly all sorts of people can find themselves unable to meet their mortgage payments, running into difficulty paying their rent, and they can be faced with the really traumatic experience of losing their home and finding themselves with nowhere to go. And unfortunately, the government is not doing enough to protect those who are faced with homelessness, to support them, to enable them to stay in their homes. But we obviously still have a huge challenge in front of us. We have a network of advice centres around the country. We have online advice. Anyone can go to our website. Anyone can phone our helpline that's open 7 days a week, because we know that the best thing to help people avoid the nightmare of homelessness is to get advice early. Too many people leave it too late before seeking advice, and often by then it's too late to help them.
Since 1948, millions of Palestinians have been exiled from their homeland. Lauren Booth took us through the reasons in her documentary, Diaspora.
Since 1948, millions of Palestinians have been forced into exile from their own lands. In this series, we seek to find out what happened to the refugees of 1948 and how their families are coping with six decades in exile. Today, we meet the Zidani family from North Galilee.
In 1948, more than 1,500 Palestinians lived in the Galilee village of Al Damoun. On July the 15th, Jewish troops entered and occupied the village. Everyone was expelled.
شايف علي؟ يعني شو بده يكون عيشة الطفل؟ ولا شيء. ما شاف شيء بحياته بأرضه. يعني ما في طفولة قضيناها بفلسطين، ما في. حتى لما قبل ما نطلع من هناك بسنة واحدة، حياة أبوي عمر بيت جديد تحت منا بالأرض تبعنا، وما سكننا فيه ولا تاني.
Describe what your family's city or village was like in 1948 before the Nakba.
إحنا طبيعة فلاحين قرية. قرية نعيش مع أطفال مثلنا مثلهم يعني بهالزواريب بالحارات مثل ما بسموها بالعامية نقعد مع بعض نلعب مع بعض ليل ونهار مع بعض أصحابي كلياتهم طلعوا معنا على لبنان وربينا في لبنان
On PressTV.ir, CIA agent owns up to anti-Iran mission. A CIA spy recently detained in the Islamic Republic has confessed to having been on a mission to infiltrate the Iranian intelligence ministry. In a televised confession, broadcast on Iranian TV on Sunday night, the operative, named Amir Mirzai Hikmati, said he joined the U.S. Army in 2001 and underwent decades-long intelligence training. He also said that he went to the U.S.-run Bagram Air Base in eastern Afghanistan and was given access to classified intelligence before flying to Tehran. Hikmati, of Iranian origin, who was born in the southwestern U.S. state of Arizona, said he intended to win the confidence of the Iranian intelligence apparatus with information that he had been given by the agency. Thanks so much for watching. Keep your emails coming to realitycheck@presstv.ir. You know, the next time that we see each other, Christmas would have passed already. So for all of you who celebrated, we wish you a very Merry Christmas and happy holidays. I'm Kavit Tahwi, and I'll see you next week.